everybody. Welcome back to Master of the Universe podcast. Joey Cage here along with the Man Beast Gabe and old CJK. And today we're talking about another 1991 film with Cape Fear. And this was, believe it or not, I know y'all can believe it, old CJ's pick. And man, let's get right into it. Chris, Cape Fear, tell us about it, why you love it, and all that good shit, man.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'll just tell you this. I mean, why I love it is just simple. Like, I love, and you guys know this about me, I love fucking movies that have to do with, like, sociopathic, psychopathic, stalker, crazy type people. That just, for whatever reason, that really appeals to me, so I love it, and a lot of fun. And you get to see De Niro in a new light, so I'll leave it at that.
You leave it at that. Okay. I love the cover.
It's like, all right. I give it a solid 4.5. You know, why not?
That's fucking fun.
So, Gabe, tell us, you know, break it down for us, dude. Tell us about this film. You know, give us the 2-minute condensed version, and then we'll break it down layer by layer why it's the most ridiculous movie of all time.
So, pretty much like what this damn movie is it's about this guy who got this lawyer who ended up doing a half-ass job, you know, defending him. Anyways, this guy ends up going to jail, losing 15 years of his life in prison, but he's not, you know, just going to sit back and just take it like anybody else. So he goes ahead and decides to edumacate himself. Yeah. So he starts reading books and shit like that, gets out of prison, decides to make it his lifelong journey to go ahead and make this guy his lawyer. It, not anybody else, not the arresting officers or anything. His lawyer that was supposed to be defending him, he decides to go ahead and spend the rest of his time, or dedicates his life to go ahead and pretty much harassing and making this guy's life miserable. Not just him, but also his family. Anything that revolves around him. So, pretty much, as it gets down to it, the lawyer's panicking. But the criminal, the guy who lost 15 years of his life, is doing everything he can to harass and hurt this guy. But he's doing it within the law. So, leave it to the lawyer, panicking and freaking out. Which makes this movie ridiculous. He's freaking out, flipping out, doing all these crazy things, and to try to catch this guy in the act, trying to stop him, put an end to it, and nothing is working. As it goes all the way down to coming down to the end, now all of a sudden it comes down to life or death. The criminal ends up threatening the guy's family and him, and he's trying to make sure that they're all going to pay and suffer like the way he did in prison. Because if you go to prison, you lose 15 years of your life. Seriously, I mean, there's no getting that shit back. Yeah. You can't say, like, hey, I'm sorry about that. Let me go ahead and get some money. Let me do something for you. No.
He does do that. He's like, let me see, 10 grand. Let me see.
Right.
10 grand over 15 years.
Can I quote that? Right. Can I quote that, please? Because I know that line, like, almost exactly. He's like, hey, what do you want? $10, what do you call it? $20. That's it. $20,000. Let's say $50,000. Okay, $50,000. All right, now 14 years times 365 days. That's about 5,000 days. $50,000 divided by 5,000. That's about $10 a day. That's not even minimum wage, counsel. not to mention the family I lost, the friends I lost, the respect I lost. Mm-hmm. I don't think you really understand what we're talking about here, counselor.
I don't really think you understand what we're talking about here. Yeah, I love some of the quotes, all the stuff De Niro says. I was talking to the guys earlier, and we're talking about guys that act the same way. Now, while his accent is different and he's really good in this film, you know, De Niro's got the same mannerisms and the facials and all the shit that he does. Kind of like we're like talking about Vince Vaughn and Seth Rogen and who's Jack Nicholson. You get all these guys that are like they're just playing themselves, and they're good at what they do. And but this was probably one of my favorite, where he's kind of like over the top in this film with all the crazy ridiculousness. So, I mean, Chris, what stands out about this? Is it just the story? Because before we start trashing it with the riding underneath cars for 100 miles.
Which I admit was fucking ridiculous. I will readily
did you?
Admit-
Did you, like, see the movie like that when you saw it, or it was kind of like, I mean, because I know, I don't always see things, like, until, like, Gabe brings it up, or even you, like, I didn't, like, we'll get to It Follows when we talk about it, but, I mean, did you see a lot of those things, or, like, it was kind of those things that when we brought it up, you're like, well, yeah, that is true, but I didn't notice it, or what did you?
Well, I mean, things weren't that kind of deal killers for me at that age when I thought, because, like, that was a movie as a kid, like, I want to say I was like, God, what was I? Probably early high school, the first time I saw it, and you know I was looking at it because to me it was a grown up movie and with those actors that everyone always talks about on Entertainment Tonight, like Robert De Niro, like Nick Nolte, etc. So Siskel and Ebert always. So to me it was like a respectable film that I should look up to. And then I'm for me the storyline dynamic is really what does it. So it's a thing where like you can't help but sympathize with the guy because we're all human beings. We all fuck up. Sometimes we get lazy on some. Sometimes we don't do our best job at something, whatever. And, you know, inadvertently you hurt somebody, but you don't think it's going to come back all these years. You're just going about happy-go-lucky, living your life, all that stuff, and then some guy with a grudge comes at you. And you think you can get out of it. You think everything, you get concerned, and you get more and more concerned as this problem keeps coming around, and you keep thinking everything you can do to get out of this problem, and it's not going away, and it seems to even get worse over time. So, you know, like he tries paying him off, he tries going to another lawyer, he tries going to the cops, he tries going to judges, he tries going to a thug to like beat this guy up, and it's just none of it's working, and it finally just comes to a fucking hill when he tries to like kill his fucking family on a boat. It's like fucking ridiculous, but I mean, the lengths it goes to, but I mean, and yes, like I said, again, once again, I'll readily admit, and they did a good job parodying this in The Simpsons with Sideshow Bob riding under a fucking car for all that time. Good Lord, but it wasn't a deal killer for me because I was younger and less critical back then. But just the dynamic at play of a guy being afraid for his life, the safety of his family, because of a mistake he made 15 years ago. Yeah. I get it.
No, I'm just saying, for, I mean, I know when you see things back then, they're like different than when you see them now. But I'm saying like, yeah, like now when you see it now, do you kind of like, you didn't see how ridiculous it was till we kind of like talked about it more? Or...
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, when you talk about it, when you bring that up, it's like when I think about it in my mind's recollection, that part never comes back to me. And I've watched that movie, you know, in the past 5 years, at least five times. And that part just never sticks. You know, dumb as it is.
You know what it is? It's like hanging on with Mark too much and being very cynical. And you're like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, you know, the dynamic here, and this is a movie I would see around the same time as I first saw this, it was like, and you know, when you're in high school and middle school and shit like that, and you kind of can relate to this a little more, like that movie 3 o'clock High has the same story dynamic. And I know y'all probably haven't even seen that movie or even heard of it, but they used to play it on TBS all the time. It's this high school teenager. He's like, I don't want to say nerdy, but you know, he's like he's in the fucking debate team and he writes for the school newspaper and all this stuff. And one day, he has a run-in with this new guy who's, like, way taller and muscular, looks like the wrestler fucking Raven. And he has some kind of, I forget what it is, but he has some kind of run-in with him. And the guy says, okay, we're fighting after school, 3 o'clock, meet me here. And he's doing everything he can to get away from the guy or get detention or get sent home from school. He even tries to skip class and get in his car, and the guy, like, disables his ignition or something. And it's like, but, like, he's like, no, you're not getting out of here. We're fucking fighting after school. So finally, unless you give me this amount, so finally he breaks into the school store, gets like $300, gives the guy $300. Oh, I can't believe you gave up that easily. You know, it's like that kind of thing. It's very similar. Like you got this problem, you're scared of it. It's anxietying you, and you're doing all these things to try to make it go away, and it just won't go away.
South Park did it the best when Cartman's supposed to fight Wendy after class, and he ends up taking a shit on Mr. Garrison's desk, so he gets out of the he gets detention.
I ate my underwear.
I ate my underwear. Yeah,
and
man.
And they were like, that's so cool, man. Hey, don't worry. We rescheduled the fight for tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, I love me some South Park. Dude. They're gonna redo everything. So that's exactly where they probably got it from. But, yeah, I mean, when I saw see, Chris had mentioned this film a couple of years ago. And when I saw it, I actually really liked it. It was like, wow, that was a good film. And only seen it once, and it must have been like 2 or 3 years ago at least. And then I watched it this time, and man, I was laughing from beginning to end on just the overkill with everything going Robert De Niro's way, Max Caddy, from, you know, him when, you know, getting all the money, right, when he gets out of jail, which you're like, okay, that's fine, right? It's believable because, I mean, 15 years, a lot can happen, and, you know, someone could leave you something, right? So it's kind of like not a big deal. But then, like, he starts stalking him and doing all these things to him, and everything's going, you know, and going his way from biting his secretary, like, you know, hitting on her, right, getting her to go home with him, and then beating the shit out of her, biting her cheek, and then she's not going to testify against him. So he basically gets away scot-free, which to me was like, okay, yeah, right, all this. So I'm still like, okay, fine. And then, you know, he goes after the dog, not a big deal, very believable, but you're like, man, this fucker, like, and to me, like, right away, it's like, how come he doesn't have cameras? He's got this PI, but how come no one's watching his house, you know, real diligently? Like, they have to, but, you know, and he's popping firecrackers or whatever the fuck. But the parts that got me is he hires the goons to go beat up, you know, Max Caddy, and they have, like, a weapon, and Max ends up beating them all up, damn near to death. And, you know, and you're like, oh, my God. Like, there's nothing this guy can't do. They decide to flee town for whatever fucking reason. They're going to go isolate themselves in the middle of a fucking lake. And Max Caddy's underneath the fucking car the whole time. And I'm just like, okay. I mean, I was kind of like, I was just laughing at that point. But, and then, of course, I thought it was funny, and I understood why they did it. They had to, like, get the character more over because everything goes his way. So at the very end, he gets set on fire to give him, like, the Freddy Krueger look. And it actually looked really good. And you were like, man, that should have been, like, the gimmick a little bit. I mean, I know you don't want to put that kind of makeup on him the whole film, but it actually gives him a more serious, you know, scary look. You're like, well, fuck, now you know why he's pissed, you know? So,
yeah.
I like that part, but it was pretty crazy.
And what about him pretending to be the fucking high school English teacher, talking to the daughter and hanging upside down, talking to her on the phone?
Yeah,
like, honestly, like, I had a lot of issues with this movie. And I honestly, like, I really don't remember really watching it. I remember it, like, the name, and it's like one of those things on the tip of your tongue that you're like, oh, yeah. I might have seen it. I don't remember. Oh, but man, after watching it, like, I am serious. There was just, like, so many things. It's like it's like watching a slow car wreck that you can't really can't look away. You can't look away. First off, the damn character, the Max Caddy, the prisoner, the one who lost 15 years of his life. Like, he is invincible. Like, I mean, I shit you not. Like, every single little thing that he does seems to work in his favor, which is, you know, it's good for the film because you want to see the bad guy win, you know, and put the other guy on edge. Honestly, I didn't really see it as so much as, like, he's a psychopath, but more, I think that term is kind of, like, used very loosely as to someone that you're very upset or you're afraid of. I think for him, I think more of an appropriate deal would be that he's like an adult bully, but he's doing everything within the law limit, yeah. which pisses me off because the guy he's attacking is the damn lawyer. And I brought it up to you guys, which the guy is a damn lawyer. He has friends that are in that business, that type where they understand the law. They work with the law. They understand the ins and outs. I felt like this guy, with all his years of experience, you know, and I'm sure it takes, he has to be interning. He's got to do all kinds of shit just to have this kind of a life experience so he can know what he's dealing with and be able to, not at least shut him down, but at least to kind of keep him at bay pretty well. But he doesn't do any of that. The damn lawyer throughout this whole movie is, like, freaking out, flipping out, more so than the wife. The wife is just upset with him about, you know, that it came to light that he was somewhat, or I think he was cheating. Like, he was messing around with, like, another girl.
Yeah, that secretary.
Yes.
Yeah, and he didn't want his wife to know. So you just see, like, the drama between
them.
She
looks up to me. We don't got nothing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then... And she, yeah, and then you have the then you have his daughter, who's actually more infatuated with, you know, Max Caddy, this damn criminal, who ends up calling her, and he ends up like tricking her into making her seem like, hey, I'm gonna be your teacher, you know, why don't we chit chat and why don't we talk? So Juliette Lewis is the damn daughter, and man, she's such a pretty girl in that damn movie. But there's, like, a scene in there, and I brought it up to you guys, too. I even sent a picture, because I had to freeze frame this shit.
Yes, you did.
She, the damn girl, she's supposed to be playing a 15-year-old girl, and she's there sitting in her panties and everything, sitting, laying all sexy on her bed, and the dad opens the door, and he's, like, having a conversation with her about, like, oh, don't worry if you're afraid, and you don't have to go to school if you don't want to. I know you were... talking to the criminal and you didn't know it, and oh, I'm all right, Dad, and you know, she's like trying to be all flirtatious about it, like, oh, you know, and I was like, really? I was like, man, this chick is like 15 years old, and this is like, you know, there was a lot of things going on during the 90s, and sexualization, like being really out there, seemed to be like the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you were, like, the construction worker drinking a Coke, but outside some office building, and all of a sudden all the ladies are all running up to the window just to get a glimpse. Or, like, that sexy woman in a bikini in the billboard when, you know, just driving by on the highway and shit like that. That shit was all over the place. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, man, to do it in this movie and then to say that was, like, a 15-year-old girl to make it seem like that was all right at the time was pretty, I don't know. It was kind of like, I guess it's a lot different in comparison to now, where like even the mere mention of something like that, you know, people are like, oh, how dare you sexualize that young woman? She's an independent, free,
yeah,
you know, modern, politically correct, non-gender fluid. And I'm like, really? I was like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I feel bad about it now. But you did that shit in the damn 90s. Shit. Shit, just like this movie does, like a lot of little things like that. That's ridiculous, and it keeps you interested just because you're seeing a lot of these weird acts. Even one of the best parts, and I think you all have to agree, that when Max Caddy is like infiltrating the family's house, they know he's in the house, but they don't know how he's in the house. They're like, oh, or where he is. Well, guess what? He's dressed up as the damn maid.
That was the part that did it for me, dude. I forgot about it until you said that. I was like, I could not stop laughing. So the icing on top is, you know, he's got a private investigator looking after the house, and the private investigator gets done in by, you know, Max dressed as the fucking, you know, fucking maid, and then chokes him out. And he gets away with you know, with murder on top of that. It's just like nonstop stuff like that. Like, you know, if he killed the PI, like in his car somewhere else, it would have been like more believable or something. But it's like he breaks into the house. The suspense is real, and there's no cops. No one's gonna like, you know, arrest this guy for fucking, you know, something. They're like, hey, we're checking his. I'm sure there's fingerprints somewhere, and it just. Too much, but it's fun, you know. I'm not gonna say it's not. It's fun. It's like it's ridiculous, over the top, but it's fun nonetheless.
Yeah, like definitely, like I said, it keeps you interested. But like I told you all, when I was watching this, like pretty much like all the movies or the ones that I'm more interested in, I happen to, when I'm watching them, if they happen to be a little long, like honestly, I don't really notice it. Like, I really don't find myself having to pause the movie to say, oh, I got to go to the restroom, or, oh, I have to do this. Like when I'm watching it, I'm, like, I'm sitting there, and I'm, like, zoned in, like, why the hell is this person acting like that? Why are you doing this? But this movie, like, I use the insult. Man, this movie is long, and I mean two VHS tapes long. And I made that as a reference to, like, the damn 90s and their damn VHS tapes. You know, Titanic VHS tapes long. That shit, and this movie is, like, 2 hours and, like, so many minutes. But
It feels longer, right? It feels way longer than that, yeah.
It does.
Yeah. It's a long movie, but, I mean, the thing is, I guess for me,
Chris was trying to punish us. He's like, let me pick the longest fucking movie I can pull up in this.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I guess for me, even though there are some stories like him fucking dressing up as a maid and riding under a car and hiding, you know, he can beat up three guys. Then again, if you're a hardened prisoner, you learn how to do some squabbles. But, you know, and also fucking talking to the daughter hanging upside down on a inversion table. I mean, there is some silliness to it, but it's great to see the fucking range, like the dynamic immediately hooks you in. You're hooked. You're watching. Like, you're not getting distracted with this. And then you see De Niro range, because you're used to him always being some New York accent, you know, mob guy. I mean, even when he's not really a mob guy, like in Casino, he's just a bookie, a handicapped guy, and then goes and runs a casino. You know, even that, but it's still, like, it's that type of role you're used to seeing him in, and that type of voice, and that type of vernacular. The only departure from that is Taxi, where he's, like, actually a good guy fighting the streets. But now here you are, you see him being this white trash, you know, ex-con southern guy, you know, who comes in some money because his mom dies while he was in prison, you know, loses his daughter while he's in prison, all this stuff, and now he's playing like a sociopath. Like, De Niro doesn't play sociopath stalker. Samuel L. Jackson plays that character a lot, but he doesn't. So you really get to see he can operate outside the fucking mafia movie range.
I don't know about that, Jerry. I mean, he's still playing the tough guy. He's still playing a tough guy, but just a little bit different accent. But
it's not mob, though. It's him as a lone psycho with a vendetta.
You can say that, you know, Jason plays a little boy, you know, just trying to get revenge for his mommy, but he's a killer in each one. I mean, they're all a little bit different. But, I mean, yeah, you may say that, but he's still – I mean, here he's a lot more doing crazy shit than he normally does, but he's always doing crazy shit.
I kind of feel like this movie falls along the lines for people that love De Niro. Like, if you love – you know, everybody has, like, their great actors and actresses and stuff, and they like to follow along on them, like, you know, in certain movies that they, you know, that they're in. You know, I for one, like to do that. Tony Todd, for one, you know, yeah. From Night of the Living Dead to Candyman. He's, you know, he was like a what was it, on Final Destination. He plays the gravedigger. I mean, I like following, I like seeing that guy, like, just kind of pop up out of nowhere and just play certain characters. I think De Niro is such a classic type of actor. I mean, it's for him to act or do anything weird or off-putting, it would be definitely something to notice. But I think if you're a fan, it's just more enjoyable just to watch him than really notice if he's doing anything wrong or something that he shouldn't. And I think an example of that was like we were talking earlier today about Adam Sandler. I was saying that sure. This guy is the same garbage across the board. I know people are going to be offended by saying, because I said garbage, they think he's a, you know, classic comedy comedian. But honestly, but then he did a movie recently on A24 where his role was completely different. I'm certainly not going to watch it only because of the fact that I don't care for Adam Sandler. I don't think he's funny, regardless of whatever role he does change in. But I know for those people that loved all his classic stuff, and they just...
It's a big, you know, step, grew, yeah,
to, yeah. Yeah, they grew to love him. They're going to watch that, and they're going to think it's amazing.
So, you're like, not me, honestly, uh-uh.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm playing hard to get, I guess. But, I think Robert De Niro is probably somewhere along those lines. People love, I mean, he plays the tough guy. I mean, regardless of any role that you can put him in, he plays the tough guy role. What was that movie? Meet the Fockers. He plays like the dad and stuff, and he still does the same thing. It's a comedy movie, but he still plays the tough, like, hey, I'm the tough dad, you know, don't fuck with me. Or,
well, he's a CIA, know. He's like ex-CIA, yeah, so he's always, I mean, it's, you know, like, it's not exactly, I don't think any role is going to be, but I'm saying, like, yeah, he's always, like you said, the tough guy role, whatever, either he's a mob boss, he works for the mob, he's got a, here he's a, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's about the same, he's got the same tone. This one, his accent's a little bit different than what he normally does. But yeah, I mean, this is his closest thing to horror. I mean, he did the boxing movie. I think Martin Scorsese directed it, and so
Raging Bull.
Yeah, Raging Bull. Martin Scorsese's done a lot of crazy scenes. He mentioned Taxi, The Gangs in New York, which I love. Not a horror movie, but I love that one. I think The Aviator, just a ton of good stuff. So it's kind of interesting for me to be like, wow, this great director. He did The Wolf on Wall Street, The Departed, Shutter Island, like all the really good movies. So this is like a real, like, over the top, you know. I mean, they're all kind of over the top when you think about, like, The Departed, the kind of luck that you have. But this one's certainly the top one, and like the real closest thing to horror that he's done that I know of. But that's all I got to say about that. Yeah. Chris, your ranking.
Man, I'm gonna give, you know me and my love for sociopath movies.
That's why I wanted you to go first, man.
I'm gonna give it a 9. As long as, you know, I really don't get tired. I mean, if I were to watch it like every month, I probably would get tired of it. But you know, this is one I can easily watch a few times a year, you know, 2-3 times a year, and not get tired of it. And fucking the dynamic of, you know, running away from a guy who you can't seem to shove off you, and being scared and trying everything you can, and then De Niro as a Southern white trash nutbag, just amazing. And Nick Nolte, of course, you know, that's a great actor. You know, it's a 9. It's a 9 to me. Yeah, in spite of some of the
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a. I mean, this. In spite of some of the silliness here and there, but for the most part, I think it's fantastic.
No, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not gonna shit on you for loving the film. I mean, there's films that I'm gonna love, and I know so. At least your name's not Jason. Starts winking at Jason. For me, I'm gonna have. This one's tough because, you know, I'm going to go ahead and give it a 6.5 because I gave Puppet Master 6.8, and I think I'm more inclined to watch that more often than this, even though I think, of course, it's a better movie, you know, when it comes down to everything. But as far as my preference to want to rewatch something, like, I think Puppet Master's a little bit more. But this was, like, fun. Like, this is something I would watch. I mean, of course, watch again. But it's just so over the top for me. And if I'm going to watch De Niro, I'd much rather see him in his other stuff than this. But, yeah, 6.5 for me. Gabe.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, with all the things that happened in that movie, and I just kind of – I felt so – like it was fun to watch, but it was tedious at the same time. Like I said, it's a slow car wreck, and you're just like, oh, this is terrible, but you can't look away from it. So – honestly, I would have given this a straight out, like, probably 5 or 5.5, but I'm going to give it a 6 because I love Juliette Lewis. She was awesome in Natural Born Killers and From Dusk Till Dawn. Oh, man, that chick is hot. So that's the only reason why I'm going to give it. It got bumped up only because she was in it.
You mean Fred Thompson, Senator Fred Thompson, did nothing for you for the movie?
No, I felt something move, but no, it wasn't him.
Oh, well, you gotta be shitting me, that mother strong.
Peace.